Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is your Tuesday morning show host, Julie Calamine, and I'm joined by my co-host, Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Julie.
How are you?
Good. It's a nice day out, sort of. Dramatic clouds on the backdrop, the little fog, little cloudy layers up the mountainside.
Dusting of snow.
It's winter.
That's right. It is. And before we go into our morning show, we might as well talk about the weather because it's looking a little bit better for the ski and snow lovers. I'm seeing a bit of snow in town every day this week, Phil.
Just that half inch added a lot this morning.
Well, not very much, but we've got to start somewhere. So it looks like a chance of snow every day, highs in the, you know, middle 30s, chance of snow from 70%, 30, 90, 90, 70. So we should be getting a little snow and rain, and hopefully it's all snow up at Schweitzer.
Well, as long as it's cold enough to keep making the snow, then at least one or two runs will stay open.
That's right. And it is also the season of potlucks, isn't it, Phil? Have you been going to any?
Oh, yeah. Big weekend for potlucks. Too big a weekend. We ended up too big after the weekend, I think.
It's an endless potluck procession right up until Christmas, and then we'll take a break, right?
Yeah.
Yes, very good. Well, Christmas is coming, and Christmas bird counts are coming. But before we talk about that, we're going to talk with someone who's very interesting, and we've had her here before, but it's been a while. Our guest this morning is Molly McCann. Molly, you're the Executive Director of the Lakes Commission. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you back.
Welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the Lakes Commission. It's commonly called the Lakes Commission, but the real name is a full mouthful, so let's just get it out of the way.
The full name?
Yes.
Okay, so we're officially called the Lake Ponderay River, Priest Lake, and Priest River Commission, which encompasses the Ponderay Basin. So initially we were the Ponderay Basin, changed to this fuller name so that we made sure we had all those water bodies represented. Now we call ourselves the Lakes Commission, and that just sort of stuck.
Good.
Much better marketing.
Quite an acronym.
Correct, yes.
Most of the alphabet. Oh, boy. So, Molly, tell us a little bit about you and your background and how you got involved with the Lakes Commission.
Okay, well, I'm a lifelong resident of Sandpoint, if the fourth grade counts. Was not born here. But I was here when Taft's was downstairs. I don't know if you remember Taft's.
Mm-hmm.
And JCPenney's was at the end of the street, and Safeway was right down there. So I consider myself a lifelong resident. I was schooled in landscape architecture. And in that, I focused on sustainable design, low-impact development, beneficial native plant use, stormwater filtration systems. And so that led me to a job called the Lake Assist Program with the Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District. And in that job, I educated the public and shoreline landowners on how to protect water quality through their land use practices on the shore. And at that time, the Lakes Commission was actively pursuing a boat wash station for aquatic invasive species. They were working on aquatic invasive species extensively. So they requested that the Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District run a boat station. And that was a grant through the state, and they started the first boat station down at the city beach.
Was that the first in the state?
It was the first state station.
I see.
First one run by the
There state. Were other, you know, I think Kokolala had its own private wash station that was sort of, you know, served by volunteers and community members. But it was sort of the official start to the boat program, the boat inspection program.
And that was while you were with another organization.
So I was working for Lake Assist with the Conservation District, but then the Conservation District took on that station. So I quickly partnered with the Lakes Commission at that time. It was initially Kate Wilson, who is now in Montana and represents aquatic invasive species issues in Montana for the state. And then Aaron Mader, who is now Aaron Plue, had the position. And so I worked with both of them since their inception, essentially, on educating on aquatic invasive species, water quality issues, just anything that they were working on at the time. And that led me to become an assistant for the Lakes Commission. They just needed some more capacity. And then when Erin Mader moved on, I was hired to take her position.
Mm-hmm. And so it was a natural fit for you, it sounds like.
Well, I think so. Yeah.
So give us a little bit more background on the Lakes Commission itself, how it came into being, the breadth of things in a big picture that it does.
Okay, I'll do my best. The Lakes Commission is an advisory board, a state-appointed advisory board, related to water issues in the Pend'Oreille Basin. Our board is appointed by the governor's office.
And what is the Pend'Oreille Basin, Molly?
Well, it is essentially those four water bodies that I described, Lake Pend'Oreille, the Pend'Oreille River, Priest Lake and Priest River, and then all the tributaries within.
Big. It's a big area.
And then, of course, we're just representing the Idaho boundaries of that basin. So, you know, the Pend'Oreille River does flow into Washington, and the Clark Fork flows from Montana. So, you know, we are bordered by other states, but we're representing Idaho. Mm-hmm. So I guess the Pend'Oreille Basin is bigger than Idaho. There's no, you know, water doesn't really have a boundary.
But your focus is the impact.
But we need to develop these in order to have some sort of system in place.
Mm-hmm. Yes, makes sense.
So our board is appointed by the governor. We have five members appointed by the governor. Ford Elsesser, Brent Baker, Linda Mitchell, Mark Brinkmeyer, and Craig Hill. And they all are local residents of Bonner County who are representing different water mm-hmm. those different water bodies.
And these appointments may not be, but they seem like they're for life.
They have been a long time.
Yes, that's because they're doing an excellent job.
Yeah.
Yes. And they represent different interests, too.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we also have a representative from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who we currently don't have that filled, but the director of U.S. Fish and Wildlife will appoint someone to sit on our board.
So it seems like observing and filling some blanks here, the main functions, plural, for the commission are to provide input, some suggestions or recommendations to the governing agencies, and then also an opportunity for public engagement.
Correct. Yeah, that's that's a good summary. We were created initially due to lake level issues. In 2003 was when we were created, or the Lakes Commission was created, and it was because at that time, kokanee numbers were dropping in the lake, and it was believed that how the lake was being managed was affecting that.
They're spawning.
Yes. And I'm not exactly sure what the operation at the time was, but I think that it was a low winter. They started low winter levels, which means they drafted it the full amount. And so it was just recognized that there needed to be representation for the community and the state under these lake level issues because the lake is managed by federal agencies and not the state. And so the state could, mm-hmm. so Fish and Game was primarily the agency, the state agency that would weigh in on those issues because they are directed and charged with managing our fishery. But there wasn't a representation for the community, sort of the socioeconomic piece mm-hmm. of
the. And that's important because there's an awful lot of competing interests that the federal agencies are using in determining the lake levels, aren't there?
Yes. Large, very important variables. They're managing it for flood control, hydropower, irrigation, fish,
recreation
for the entire Columbia River system, and we're just a piece of that system.
So it's easy for Lake Pend'Oreille to be looked at as a storage device, essentially.
It is a storage device. It is officially a federal storage project. Yes.
Which doesn't necessarily take into account all of the other interests, and that's why you're here. You're an advisory committee, correct? I mean, you all don't make the rules, but you offer input.
Correct.
Yes.
Yep. That's a good description.
Yes.
So tell us how that's been going. 2003, it's been around a while.
It has, yeah. And I just think it was really intuitive at the time because those water issues and those lake level issues are always going to be there, and they mm-hmm. recognized that at the time. When I started, I didn't realize. I guess I just sort of realized that the problem, or thought that the problem might be solved. You know, we've got an extended summer recreation season and a later fall drawdown. But no, it just keeps coming at you, these decisions that are being made. So yes, currently I am very focused on dam operations. The Albany Falls Dam operations are undergoing two very important decision-making processes that could affect lake levels on Lake Pend'Oreille. And then Outlet Dam in Priest Lake is undergoing some changes. So those dams have very much been my focus lately.
Mm-hmm. And why are the dams coming to light right now? There's some sort of a time frame that's coming up, correct?
Yes. First, let me give some context.
Thank you.
Albany Falls Dam is operated, it is one of 14 federal dams on the Columbia River system. It's managed by the Army Corps of Engineers, but the decision-making for all the dams on the federal system are a team of federal agencies. The Army Corps of Engineers, the Bureau of Reclamation, Bonneville Power Administration, and then usually NOAA or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. NOAA if it's marine fish, you know, marine life involved, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife if it's freshwater. And so it's difficult for people to picture, I think, but on how Albany Falls and Lake Pend'Oreille fits into the entire Columbia River. And Pend'Oreille system is one of the three largest tributaries to the Columbia. The Kootenai River above us, the Pend'Oreille system, which includes Clark Fork and then in Washington, the Pend'Oreille River in Washington, and the Snake River. And so, you know, it's hard over the radio, but get out a map and kind of look at that, and you can figure out where we fit in. And we provide over a third of the flows to the Columbia River system.
Well, that's pretty significant.
It is. Yeah. Yes, we have a lot of water up here in North Idaho.
So storage devices go. It's a pretty important one.
It really is. I didn't realize how significant it was, but it plays a big piece. And that, I think, is primarily because it's such a large water body. You can draft it a small amount and get a large amount of water. Mm-hmm. So the 11.5 feet that Albany Dam impounded, and that's the lake level that's controlled. The rest of it is on its own. That is a 1 million acre feet of water.
Okay, so what you're saying is that we've got sort of 11 feet of vertical give
rise
and take that we
lake.
Have to work with each mm-hmm. year. And that's controlled by the Army Corps and all the other groups that work together.
Yep, it's part of a very large system that's in place.
So tell us about that up and down. It's not just a steady up and steady down. There's degrees of fluctuation that occur over time and there's intervals. Tell us a little more.
Okay, so historically, the lake would refill around by July 4th, and then it would start drafting Labor Day, so first week in September. And over time, we've worked to have a longer summer season. Mm-hmm. And so it now is June 15th is generally when you see the refill, and September 18th is when it starts drafting. So it's about 3 months. And then in the past, it would either draft the full amount, and that is 2051, elevation 2051. And then when the Kokanee issue came about, a group was created to decide every year whether it should actually be drafted the full amount or be held halfway, which is 2056. Uh-huh. And so Fish and Game determined that the Kokanee needed to spawn at a higher elevation and that they needed that water and that those spawning grounds. So every year a group would meet, Lakes Commission was involved in that, and decide, they had a decision tree that would decide what the lake level would be each winter. And that took place for, I don't know, I think 5 years. So there were times when the lake was held high in the wintertime. And then around 2014, a number of things happened. The Clark Fork Delta Restoration Project was underway, and they needed low winter lake levels. They needed to lake to be down. And Fish and Game determined that kokanee did not need to spawn that high. A study was conducted, I forget by whom, and their kokanee had very specific spawning grounds, and they did not need that lake level. And so from that point forward, essentially, we have a low winter lake level every year and have since then.
And the kokanee are doing fine, yes?
Yes. I mean, I think people have mixed feelings about that. Their numbers are high, are increasing, but I think that there's not a lot of adults in the system is what I'm hearing.
I see.
But I'm not a fish biologist, and I don't know.
A topic for another week. Exactly. Yes.
But they're trending up.
Yes.
Correct. And that, yes, and they have been for a number of years now.
So a few years back, there was a proposal too, and I think there's some experimentation with fluctuating the lake levels in the winter for power.
Right. So that is one of the, that is the main purpose the lake is drawn down in the wintertime to its full extent, so that the Bonneville Power Administration can fluctuate the lake up to 5 feet. And for power generation when there's a cold snap in the wintertime. I think that's happened twice and I think we're going on the sixth year of the full drawdown. And then, so they can do that, I think, from January 1st on. And then they have to be done with that operation, I believe, in March. And so we don't really know when or if that will happen until we know what the weather is, until they know what their need is.
So, Molly, what are you focusing on most closely these days over the winter months? What are your main projects?
Well, as I mentioned, there's two big processes taking place right now, which started essentially 2 years ago. One is the Columbia River Treaty, which is an agreement with Canada and the United States where Canada stores 15 million acre feet of water for the United States, so for flood prevention and for hydropower production. And that agreement is up for renegotiation.
And it was a long agreement. It was in place for a long time.
Yes, 50 years. 50 years, and then at 50 years, essentially, you could give each country could give 10 years notice to say, we want to change this. Well, that process didn't really happen as it was supposed to. Nobody knew how to talk about it.
But the 50 years ran out.
50 years ran out. So. It's run out.
And we didn't get the notice until now.
No, well, we got the notice.
Yeah. I think they were Canadian years.
The U.S., I guess, was prepared to weigh in and had created recommendations for a new negotiation, a new treaty, and Canada wasn't ready to come to the table. Well, they now both have negotiators. They've now been actively negotiating, and basically that could change. Whatever they decide could change how the entire system is run. Because you literally at this point cannot change an operation on any one dam without impacting another area somewhere. Yeah. It is.
Right. And water flows downhill, so.
Correct. Yeah. And each reservoir has a different capacity and need. And so that's taking place. We're just following that closely because we don't know what that change would be. If Canada decides they don't want to store 15 million acre feet of water for us anymore, and contrast, you know, or for a visual, we're 1 million acre feet. So just to put that in context, then that would change something somewhere in the system, and we need to pay attention to what that change might be. Mm-hmm. And then the other process taking place is the Columbia River Operation System Environmental Impact Statement. And that's a process where a federal judge ruled that the operations of our dams in the United States are not being operated to best meet anadromous salmon needs. And so that process is underway, and they now have four alternatives that they're looking at to better improve operations. And one of those is to add an additional 2 million acre feet of flows from the Upper Columbia. So the Upper Columbia is us. is, so the Upper Columbia dams are going to be Grand Coulee, essentially, Albany Falls, Hungry Horse, which is up near Glacier in Montana, and Libby Dam. So basically they're proposing taking flows from those reservoirs during a low water year to meet salmon needs downstream. And all we can do is assume that if they were to take flows from Albany Falls and Lake Pendere, the only time that they could do that would be the summertime, because the rest of the year there isn't any water to take from the reservoir.
Yes, you've used your 11, we've used our 11 and a half feet.
Right.
So it would have to be summer.
So we're actively commenting that drafting the lake in the summertime would have detrimental impacts to our community and in our system. And that they are making a decision in January. They're going to pick one of those alternatives. One of them, by the way, is the breaching of the dams, the four lower snake dams.
No, not the breaching of Albany Falls.
The lower snake river dams, the four lower snake river dams, which has just been in the news a lot and been talked a lot related to anadromous salmon. And So we have to weigh in essentially this week and provide our comments before they decide which alternative. And then once they've picked an alternative, then we will weigh in again on, depending on what that is. So that's been a very intense, extensive process that we're glad to be involved in.
Yes, and coming to an end this week. Are there interviews or is it a written response? Are you going to have to go and speak with folks?
I don't know that the like a testimony of sorts would happen until the preferred alternative comes out and comments to the public are available.
It's a long process.
It's a long process, but the Trump administration put a deadline on this process. It was supposed to be due next year, this EIS, and they set a deadline for this year.
Okay.
So the process was expedited,
Interesting.
Okay. So if people want to find out more about this, is there information on your website or other websites?
I believe there is. I apologize, but I have not been updating my website as I should be. I've just been very busy currently, but I believe there is a link. I don't have the website in front of me, but CRSO, just type in CRSOEIS and you will likely come to a website that describes it.
Okay. Well, for listeners, it's an important time to be thinking about that. And if one did want to weigh in or at least keep track of what's happening, it could have dramatic effects on our area.
Absolutely. And depending on what that alternative is and the public comment process, I will absolutely get that information out to the public once that's available.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, we appreciate you coming in this morning. We have just a minute or two left. Anything we've missed you want to highlight for our listeners?
I don't think so. I don't have a Lakes Commission meeting scheduled as of yet, but I believe it'll be in February.
All right. And where does that normally take place?
Well, often, so we try to have one meeting in Priest River a year. We have quarterly meetings, and so this next meeting will likely take place in Sandpoint.
Oh, good.
And I know you have a robust email list you send those notices out to, including the local media, but if someone wants to get on the distribution list, how can they do that?
They can email me at lakescommission@gmail.com, and that is the best way to reach me.
Very good.
All right. Well, thank you, Molly. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And we've had one great guest, and we have another one coming up. We thank Molly for coming into the studio this morning to talk about the Lakes Commission. And after a music break, we're going to have Rich Del Carlo talking about ever our favorite event of the holiday season, the Christmas Bird Count.
One of my favorites. Molly McCann, thank you. Executive Director, Lakes Commission, thank you again for joining us. We're going to go to a short song break. And in honor of talking about water, it's going to be Smoke.
I still say you got to listen, or better yet, watch Pat Boone's version. YouTube it.
I wouldn't do that today. I couldn't, in fact. But it's a I bet it's good. Well, for those of you just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. This is Julie Calamine, Tuesday morning host, and joined by my co-host, Phil Huff. And we're now being joined by a really a favorite guest that we try to have on every year about this time to talk about the Audubon Christmas Count. This is Rich Del Carlo. Hi, Rich.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Rich.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
It's winter, so we think of holidays and we think of the holiday bird count.
Yes.
It's now, this has been going on a long time. How many years?
This is going to be 120 years.
And you haven't been around for all of them. Just to be clear.
I'm pretty sure he hasn't. Yeah.
How long has it been going on in our area?
Oh, you know, we kind of talk about this every year, and there's some, it's kind of some gray, I'm not really sure, but it's been since the 80s.
And when did you take it over, Rich? You've been doing it for some time.
I took it over from Earl Chapin. He and his wife, Bev, used to do it, and... they were longtime residents here and just really fun folks. But I took it over from Earl probably about 2000.
It's a long time. That means you're on like your 19th, almost 19th year. That's second, a lot of years.
100, only 100 more years and I'll be right up there, so, right?
That's right.
Give us the big picture. How did it all start? Why did Audubon begin this project?
Well, there used to be, prior to this, there were bird counts, but they were, it was a Christmas tradition where somebody decided, hey, let's go out on Christmas and shoot as many birds as we can, and the winner, I don't know what the winner gets, but...
Dinner.
You know, yeah,
for sure. Dinner.
But, so, obviously, somebody said, you know, this is probably not a great idea, so... Let's
maybe let's after the passenger pigeon and
well,
the,
you know, and it was about that time when birds were declining.
Yes,
egrets were declining because of the plume for feathers, and you know, I mean, there was a lot of harvesting going on. So Audubon Society started it, and then it became a. It's actually the largest citizen science project in the world.
Yeah, it was a pretty revolutionary concept at its time, too. Citizen science.
Right, right.
So what happens? How does the bird count happen each year?
Well, our count will happen this year on December 21st. And we meet at Fifth Avenue Restaurant on Fifth Avenue here about 6:30. For those that want to have breakfast, you can come a little earlier. And then we'll head out around 7. You know, that's actually the solstice, so that'll be the shortest day of the year.
Still be dark at 7.
Yeah. And usually it's, you know, by the time we get everybody going, it's 7:15, 7:30, just about right. So, and then we're out for the whole day in groups, and I'll just kind of describe the whole circle after I talk about this. Then we meet up in the afternoon. It'll be middle afternoon because it'll be dark. And we tally up the birds. And it's, you know, it's just a really fun day and a great time of socialization and meeting people, but also, you know, we're doing some good stuff too.
And so then that information gets sent off to a national database or something?
It's it's the National Audubon Society that does it. My data goes to an Idaho compiler, and then all of the Idaho data goes to the to the bigger.
How many chapters or localities are included roughly?
Well, I was looking at the map of the locations last night, and there's thousands.
Yeah. Exactly. I looked too, and they're just little red circles all over.
Right. And you know, I mean, when you look, wait, before you zoom in on it, it's just solid colors.
Let's just cover a couple basics in our area. In our area in Idaho, there's a couple more bird counts. There's one Julie, I think you might have the details up this weekend in Coeur d'Alene on the 14th.
Rich has a little better idea, but yes, okay. It is the Coeur d'Alene this Saturday, and you have the contact person's name.
Her name is Shirley Sturtz. I don't have her number, but there is a Christmas bird count website. If you just, search Christmas mm-hmm. bird count, you can find counts in your area. So there's Coeur d'Alene, and then there's another one in Bonner's Ferry.
Yes, the week after yours. It's
right.
The 28th.
Right.
So if you were
really into it, you could do
all three weekends.
All three, but yeah. Make sure you come to the Sandpoint one.
It's kind of a marathon if you do all three.
It is.
If you haven't gotten your Christmas shopping
and then
done.
If you're not tired yet, I'm just looking at the map, you can go over to Chewila in Washington and do one on January 4th.
Really?
And then there's one on Newport mm-hmm. also.
Yep. So there's quite a bit going on, and we do have listeners. Our listening range, broadcast range, includes almost all these localities as well as live and on streaming. So if you're listening to us live and on streaming, you can go to the Christmas Bird Count site on the Audubon page and use that overwhelming map to find one or more circles in your area.
Yeah. And it's, it's not just a random search. It's basic. Once we're out there, it's kind of random. But the count circle is a 15-mile diameter mm-hmm. that's split up into fours.
Yeah, and they show that on the map here. At least they show the circle. They don't show the quadrants, but they show a dot for the locality, and then they show what appears to be about a 15-mile circumference.
Right,
Diameter
right.
circle.
And why is that important?
Well, it just gives some consistency throughout the years, and then typically, there's areas that aren't. When we go out, we're not able to cover the entire area, and the focus primarily is a lot of on the smaller towns, Kootenai, Ponderay, Dover, where people have bird feeders, and there's a little more variety, and then of course the lake is attracts a lot of birds too. So we have the river mm-hmm. and the lake.
So why is this information important? What is it used for?
Well, it's used, so they have this tremendous database of all of this historical information that they can literally probably graph every bird reported and see the trends. I mean, sure, there's going to be year-to-year changes, but they can see drastic changes, trends over the course of those 100 years or so.
Right, and those trends are downward. I just heard a report last week that the nation is worried about birds, but how are we doing here in the Panhandle?
I would say that we're down. My unscientific observation is that there's less birds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you still see a lot of birds, but we used to see 50,000-60,000 coots on the lake. We used to see that many redheads, and you still see big rafts of birds, but you don't see as many. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's just kind of logical. There's less habitat, there's more impediments towards.
So in our area, for the people who are conducting the count and enjoy birds, we're blessed with having a lot of waterfowl as well as the woodlands
yeah.
variety species.
Yeah.
Are you seeing differences in trending from the terrestrial versus the aquatic?
Yes. Somewhat, especially the birds that. There's a couple birds that used to be just real regular daily feeder birds, like pine siskins and evening grosbeaks that would come more in the winter, and even common redpolls, where just about every feeder would have a flock of those birds. And now you don't see them as much. The other one is Bohemian waxwings. And they kind of rely on the more on the berry crops. And as we talked a little bit about before, there are no mountain ash berries in town anywhere
this year. It's a bad year.
The trees did not flower. No. I don't know why, but and last year the trees were just so many berries. And so, last year there weren't that many bohemian waxings either, despite all that food. But
so it'll be interesting to see what we'll see on the count.
We'll have to work a little harder.
And yet there's less snow covered than there are many years right now, too.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that impacts food foraging.
And there'll be a little more open water, I think. We're not supposed to get really, really cold temperatures the next week or so.
So tell us what the day is like. You start off with some pancake at Mitzi's, and then what?
Pancakes at Mitzi's, and we stop for coffee you just head out, and as the day progresses, you know, you start to see birds. There's a lot of driving. So basically when you see a spot where that looks promising, you stop, get out, walk around.
So if you have a dozen people, are you all going to the same location, or are you individually going out to a dozen different locations?
Well, it would be we've never really had usually it's typically a section would have maybe six, anywhere from three to six people, and then it's just kind of staying together and then that actually increases the chances of seeing stuff, because not ever, you know,
working together.
Oh, I just saw something fly over there, or. So then it adds to the fun part of it, too.
Yeah, so it's sort of a carload or two per section, and you run out. And I know, because I've done it, we sort of look and listen. And something really nice, Rich, is that every car seems to have a pretty experienced birder. Why don't you tell us about that?
That's what I would really like to have, is just experienced birders, just... because it, you know, obviously it helps with the identification, but then it's also fun for the people that are less experienced, because everybody is, you know, very willing to share their knowledge or, you know, equipment, like if we have a scope, even just putting the scope on a golden eye or a buffalo head or something is really fun.
So all levels of ability are welcome.
Yes.
And it's nice to even just have eyes. If you're a newbie, you can at least still see movement in the bush.
Right. And then it's just, it's exposing those folks to, you know, maybe some things that they weren't aware of. And because we're not only looking, but we're also listening. And many of us have the ability to be able to identify birds from sound. So there's that level too. Mm-hmm. That...
Yes, and I'll testify that it is a learning experience, because I thought I knew quite a few birds. And the first year I joined your group, boy, did I learn a lot more. It's a wonderful opportunity for those interested in birds. And it's so affirming to meet others who care and want to help with the count. It's really a fun day.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, and I've noticed over the years that you've gotten a lot better.
Thank you. I feel like I have.
You're going, hey, Rich, is that a Townsend solitaire? Well, that's pretty good.
Thanks. Awesome. I know. Yeah, well, that's due to you all. So it's a mutual fan club over here.
It takes experience. It takes time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we hope that you get a lot of people coming out. So, you know, before we go, we've only got a couple minutes left. Tell us again, date, place, etc.
Date is December 21st. That's a Saturday. We meet at 6:30 a.m. At Fifth Avenue Restaurant. And that's just been the place we've been meeting for a long time, so it makes it easy for, if you don't remember, just go where it was last year. And then we're out until about birding until 3:30, 3 o'clock maybe, depending on daylight and weather. And then we meet, I haven't decided where we're meeting yet, after, but we'll figure that out when we're
And likely somewhere that will have beer.
Yeah. Well, you got to come,
yes,
come to the start of the day to find out where it is.
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, we actually had a problem a few years ago where one of the guys along was a really good birder, and we were going to IPA, and he couldn't go.
Oh.
But that's actually not the case with most places. IPA is kind of unique in that we could go to Eichardt's or wherever. So.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, Rich, time is short, as Phil mentioned, but just as a little teaser for folks that maybe would be on the fence about whether to join you or not, or join us or not, what might be an interesting bird or two they could expect to see? No promises, I know.
Well, I mean, you're guaranteed to see bald eagles hunting coots. We'll probably see pileated woodpeckers. There's a chance to see a pygmy owl, and hawks. We'll be looking for a rough-leg hawk and red-tail hawks. One year we saw a shrike that was actually they're the birds that catch birds and use thorns to put the prey on. We actually saw that one year.
Neat.
So there's always when you're just out there observing and you're moving slow.
Interesting
things.
You're
going to see things. Plus, you know, yes. I mean, we'll see, we could see elk, we could see moose, just tracks in the snow.
All kinds of surprises. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. That's right.
And it's always just really quiet and peaceful out there, and I think the weather should be decent.
Yeah.
Well, a reason to join the Audubon Society's annual bird Christmas count.
And once again, if you are not here locally in Sandpoint, you can go to the Audubon Society's Christmas bird count map and find a circle in your location.
Right, and then I'll just quickly pass along my contact for people. You can call me at 208-290-1405.
All right.
Call or text.
For folks who would like to join the Sandpoint Christmas Bird Count on the 21st, that's the number. Well, Rich Del Carlo, thank you so much for joining us and reminding us and encouraging us to join you for the annual Christmas Bird Count.
Thanks for
coming
in.
See you then, Julie.
Look, there's a penguin.
Oh. All right. Well, we're going to take a short song break, and this one in honor of Rich, and then be back to talk about upcoming events.